Hello, and welcome to the Deep and Durable Learning Podcast. This is the show for anyone who wants to learn how to think. Your brain was designed to think deeply, but thinking often loses out in the battle for educational efficiency. Real thinking gets pushed to the margins and eventually abandoned in far too many cases. I know there are many, including some educators, who don't believe that thinking can be taught. My students in my nearly 45 years in higher education, however, regularly told me on course evaluations that I taught them how to think. I believe I can help you with my proven strategies. Perhaps there is no figure so tied in the popular imagination to brilliant flashes of insight as the legendary detective Sherlock Holmes. Nearing the end of one of Arthur Conan Doyle's convoluted stories, we await Holmes' Elementary, My Dear Watson, followed by an account of his airtight logic that lines up all the particulars and points unequivocally to the astonished perpetrator of the crime. Join me today as we consider insight through induction. I can't promise you'll attain the mythical status of Holmes, but I believe you'll see a clearer path to developing deeper insight that will help you solve the problems you care about. In the previous podcast, I began to operationalize concept formation. Concepts are patterns that we recognize from a collection of examples. Pattern recognition employs inductive logic. It moves from specifics to a generalization that accounts for the specifics. Inductive conclusions cover additional cases that we haven't yet observed. For this reason, inductive generalizations are provisional and subject to possible revision as we use them to order our world. We use our inductive generalizations to make predictions. The predictions employ deductive logic. Deductive logic proceeds from the inductive generalization, typically called the major premise, to a specific test case, which is the minor premise, and the predicted outcome is the inductive conclusion. I was out with one of my grandchildren this morning collecting leaves for his school collection. We had very limited time, so we were quickly picking leaves, photographing the bark of the tree and the arrangement of the leaves, and moving on to the next tree. We were gathering clues. We planned to make a positive identification of each tree based on all these specifics later. In one case, however, the answer came more easily. The leaves looked like they might be those of a chestnut, so we took the pictures and were about to leave when we noticed chestnuts all over the ground beneath the tree. Case closed. At this time of year, chestnut trees produce chestnuts. In the spring, when the tree was in flower, chestnut production would be a deductive prediction. In the fall, the evidence was all over the place. We make sense of our world through the concepts that we formulate. We collect a group of particulars to formulate an idea. The idea is a concept. It's important to recognize that we encode our encounters as a group of related concepts. We do not record the event verbatim. As I've emphasized previously, the brain is not a database for particulars. Rather, the brain recognizes and creates patterns from particulars. We reflexively look for invariant attributes when we formulate our conceptual categories. Take the concept of a tomato. In my backyard, we have the last of this year's crop of tomatoes. This year, we have grape tomatoes and Roma, also known as Italian plum tomatoes. Last year, we had beefsteak tomatoes. They look very different, but they're all tomatoes. Tomatoes, as you probably know, are properly categorized as fruits, but that conceptual category also includes plants that are very different from tomatoes. Tomatoes grow on vines, but there are many other fruits which grow on vines that are not at all like tomato vines. Say, for instance, the raspberries, which are also growing in my yard. The concepts formulated in our brain are minimalist rather than maximalist. The bare concept of a tomato links to many other concepts, including fruit, vine, taste, color, etc. We do this instead of creating a single Wikipedia entry in the brain that says all there is to say about tomatoes. The rudimentary concept of a tomato is enriched through connection with other concepts that are in turn linked to a multiplicity of other concepts. This is our conceptual framework. Education at all levels is rife with the unwarranted belief that knowledge can be directly transferred from person to person. However, what is knowledge to one person is just information to the recipient. Knowledge comes only as the product of wrestling with information to formulate concepts. The information itself may be quite sound, but it is the product of someone else's thinking. Their creative, cognitive abstraction is mere information to me. It's not until I grapple with the information in search of a pattern that I can possibly formulate my own abstraction, that is, my own concept or idea. Shane Parrish of the Farnham Street podcast, which by the way often contains helpful observations about thinking, makes the analogy between a fact recipient and a line cook who's just following a recipe. The recipe is the intellectual property of the chef who created it. When things don't go as expected, the chef can troubleshoot the process and make appropriate corrections because he or she understands what makes the recipe a success. Line cooks, however, are mystified when the recipe doesn't work and don't have a clue about why or what to do to fix it. There is simply no way to eliminate the intellectual tussle with particulars in search of a pattern. Dispensing facts for recall on demand is pseudo-learning, and it's not deep nor durable. All reasoning proceeds from my organized framework of concepts, and concepts cannot be directly transferred. Education should consist of expert guidance to ensure that neophytes encounter appropriate sets of specifics sufficient for those rookies to recognize patterns and create the necessary concepts. A few helpful nudges from the expert may be needed if the rookie's floundering, but never teaching as telling. Consider an example of this strategy from the Bible. In the book of Genesis chapter 2, we find Adam being tasked by God with naming the animals. Most commentators believe this naming was purposeful and involved a classification based on the observation of specifics about each animal. Indeed, God declared that the names Adam gave would be the last word on the subject. Adam was looking for patterns in naming the animals. There was an even bigger picture, however. Adam was given this task to provide him enough specifics that he would conclude that none of the animals corresponded to him. God wanted Adam to feel his uniqueness and his aloneness. In the middle of all that was good about the creation, God said, out of earshot of Adam, "It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a companion for him who corresponds to him." Genesis 2:18, that's the NET version. Instead of just telling Adam, God orchestrated a discovery process. The result was that Adam felt his lack keenly. God graciously responded to this need by creating Eve. And Adam wrote a poem to Eve in verse 23 of chapter 2 that begins with this line from the NAT version. "This one," referring to Eve, "at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." Here's another biblical example. The most important inductive conclusion you'll ever formulate is that you are a creature living in a world that God created. God says in Romans 1:20 that there are enough concrete particulars accessible to everyone everywhere that inductive conclusion is inescapable. Here's the verse from the NET version. "For since the creation of the world, his," that is, God's, "invisible attributes, his eternal power and divine nature," get this, "have been clearly seen because they're understood through what has been made," that is, the physical realm, "so people are without excuse," end quote. Should be no question about the power of induction to drive deep and durable learning. Although we're hardwired to recognize and formulate patterns from a collection of specifics, that doesn't mean that the process of induction is always, or even usually, easy. Induction is not a linear process. It's not the application of a formula or a rigid set of rules. Induction is decidedly an individualized creative process. Creativity is built within each of us, but it waxes and wanes depending on a variety of factors. Epistemologist Esther Meek calls the quest for patterns, quote, "a kind of creative scrabbling, an imaginative casting about," end of quote. Scrabbling. Scrabble, of course, is a game where a random collection of letters is used to produce real words. Success in Scrabble requires a good vocabulary and creativity. Likewise, concept creation is dependent on your existing framework of concepts as well as creativity. When you're stuck, you need to imaginatively cast about, as Meek says. Use your imagination and look around at what you already know, but with fresh eyes. A problem-solving technique often employed in mathematics is to write down what you already know. When you spell this out clearly, inferences are easier to make and gaps are easier to identify. I remember like it was yesterday, homework from my high school geometry class over 50 years ago. The assignment was to do the first proof of the semester. I was overwhelmed. I had never done a proof before. How to get started? There was an example of a geometric proof in the text, but what I was to prove didn't seem much like the text example. Well, I forced myself to write out clearly what I did know, followed by a big blank space, and what I was supposed to prove, that is, my conclusion, at the bottom of the page. I tried to break down what I did know into even more basic form, and when I did, suddenly I could see that number one led to number two, and if number two was true, then number three would have to be true, and the desired conclusion would follow from that. The beauty of that aha moment cheers me. Seeking clarity about my existing concepts may reveal that they're not well articulated. My concepts may need more precision, or perhaps they are a contradictory admixture of ideas. Getting unstuck may require the hard work of unlearning a faulty idea. The moment of truth may have come that shows I have a misconception, and I can't build new understanding on misunderstanding. Another point of attack in my creative scrabbling may be to see if my pool of specifics is tainted. Do all the particulars belong, or have some slipped in that are poor exemplars? Dithering in the specifics doesn't create clarity. Better to have a small pool of sterling examples than a large one with extraneous distractors. Conversely, I may be trying to get by with too small a pool of specifics. Perhaps I need to find more examples to see the big picture. Just as in Scrabble, the pieces I currently have perhaps won't get me anywhere, and I need to gather additional specifics to get unstuck. To see the pattern in a collection of specifics through creative scrabbling is to have insight. The Oxford English Dictionary defines insight, the noun, in definition number 2A, as the following. It's, quote, "the fact of penetrating with the eyes of the understanding into the inner character or hidden nature of things, a glimpse or a view beneath the surface." A historic example shows the power of insight gained through creative scrabbling. The Rosetta Stone was engraved in 196 BC with a decree from King Ptolemy V Epiphanes. The decree was recorded in three different languages: Egyptian hieroglyphic, Egyptian Demotic, and ancient Greek. The stone itself was discovered near the town of Rosetta in the Nile Delta in 1799 during a Napoleonic campaign in Egypt. Almost immediately, the potential of the inscription in three languages as a means of decoding Egyptian hieroglyphics, which were undecipherable for 1,500 years, was recognized. The decoding of the hieroglyphics proved to be much more difficult than anticipated, even though many scholars worked on the problem. It was not until 1822. Think of the date, 1822. It's now 2022, so 200 years ago, that the code was cracked by a relatively obscure scholar, Jean-François Champollion. Champollion had an edge because he had learned the modern language of Coptic Egyptian Christians. The structure of the Coptic language proved to be key to deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphics. Champollion's insight made him the father of Egyptology, the study of all things Egyptian, a title he's still given today. The specifics on the Rosetta Stone required the additional specifics of the Coptic language structure before there were enough clues to inductively unlock Egyptian hieroglyphics. While insight can't be commanded, it can be cultivated. To see a pattern that was previously hidden is insight. Every time you find a new pattern and formulate that regularity as a concept, you demonstrate insight. To others who haven't yet seen the pattern, your insight may appear magical, but there's no magic involved. Cultivating the dispositions that lead to insight should mean that you are increasingly able to help others to use those same dispositions to see the hidden nature of things. This can bless them through unlocking their potential. It can also enable you to be more effective in persuading others as you help them to see how you arrived at your insight. This in turn will help teams to function with greater cohesiveness as they own the same vision with no arm twisting necessary. As always, you can go to deepanddurable.com to view a transcript of this program and to explore links to additional resources. If I may, I'd like to ask you to rate and review this podcast and to commend it to your friends if you find it valuable. Thanks. To this point this season, I've purposely simplified pattern recognition by emphasizing concept formation. Certainly, there is no reasoning without concepts, but concepts always exist in relationship to other concepts. The nature of these connections is a crucial part of pattern formation and pattern recognition. On the next podcast, I'll move into concepts and their connecting links. A concept in linkage to another concept makes a truth claim, that is, a proposition. And propositions are the fundamental units of thought. Join me in 2 weeks for the next element of deep and durable learning.